Welcome to Cybersecurity Shall Be C-Level Priority, the podcast that puts the digital world to the test. Cyber attacks are on the rise, and data is the most valuable asset in today's world. But how can we protect what matters most to us? Drawing on the latest insights, effective strategies, and practical tools, we'll show you how to create a more secure digital environment. Because one thing is clear, security isn't negotiable. It's a top priority.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Cybersecurity Chef Sash, the podcast. Today with Sven. Hi, Sven.
Hey, Nicole.
I got to know you during all the Bundestag debates, especially about the IT Security Act 2. Some people might know you from there. For those who don't know you yet, tell us a bit about yourself.
Yes, I am Sven Herbig. Currently, I lead the Cybersecurity Policy and Resilience Program at the Ott Think Tank Interface. In Germany, we are better known by our former name, Foundation Responsibility. I started my career in 2010 at the Adenauer Foundation abroad, working in development cooperation, and then in 2012, I moved to the Foreign Office, where I dealt with IT security. After that, I went to the Federal Office for Security and Information Technology, where I was involved in some political coordination and strategic topics. And since January 2017, I've been leading the department at SNV and now Interface, and we mainly deal with cybersecurity policy and the perspective on what the state should do differently, what it should do better, and what it should not do. And so far, we have worked on areas like securing machine learning, protecting elections, as well as many others, active cyber defense, open source security, all that stuff.
Yes, great. That actually touches on our topic for today. We want to talk about hackback. And right at the beginning, maybe the provocative question, should companies and the state strike back in the event of cyber attacks? Tell the attacker, hey, not with us, we're better. You've messed with the wrong people.
I think the motivation is wrong. So I would also make a distinction between companies on one side and the state on the other. For companies, it's very difficult, and I would currently say just no, let's completely stay away from that. That's a topic we might be able to tackle in 15 years. But we should first clarify this conclusively at the state level. And at the state level, that's the case if your motivation as a state is to conduct a cyber operation as a reaction to another cyber operation, just to show, hey, you've messed with the wrong people, I want to retaliate, and so on, then that's definitely the wrong motivation, and you shouldn't do it. But if your motivation is, hey, we want to investigate to attribute who is behind it, technically speaking, or we want to try that we can get into a command control structure and take it down as a reaction to that so that it won't be used against us again. Those are all motivations where I say, okay, let's take a look at the details to see if we should do that. States. And if so, then the question is always, how should one go about it? But the motivation should be very clear. To prevent direct harm and to prevent further harm. For the Federal Republic, it's about preventing or minimizing harm to companies, the economy, and society. And it shouldn't be about, hey, we're showing you we're the cooler ones, and we have a big team, and we can strike back too, because in the end, that doesn't help us. It doesn't make this country any safer.
So my personal opinion on this is actually exactly the same, because I always say this for the reason that if attackers are attacking us in the past, this has happened repeatedly. And now I imagine we would strike back. That means we would be attacking the attacker precisely out of that motivation. That means the other person would notice it and would also, let's say, run into problems and might even be upset about it. What would the counter reaction be then? That would be an even harsher retaliated, or rather another retaliation from an attacker. And then I always ask myself the question, are we even ready for that? Then, so to speak, another attacker who now, if they want to take even more initiative against us, or are even angrier at us because we've struck back, can we then fend them off again? Or is it just a constant back and forth game? And personally, I say I don't think we should do that. Out of that motivation, because in the end, we would end up on the losing side as even more pressure would be exerted from the other side, which we might not even be able to handle right now. That's my explanation where I say I would just keep the government's hands off, hack back.
I would go in there. I think that's a good approach. In the end, it is the case that, at least in the instances I know of, we have never seen a geopolitical conflict escalate because cyber operations were responded to with cyber operations. That's an in-domain escalation, which we have only seen, if at all, within the domain, so cyber against cyber, and then not to a point that has really become problematic I believe that a spiral of escalation can be triggered, for example, if I respond to a cyber operation against Germany with, say, economic sanctions. So let's assume that the typical Chinese APT obtaining some economic data from a small stealing from a German to a unicorn. And instead of some kind of the federal office or whoever conducts a cyber operation to take out this APT, let's say the foreign ministry together with the Ministry of Economic Affairs and so on, imposes economic sanctions against a critical buddy Chinese industry, possibly even together with the EU, across the EU. I believe that would escalate much more than if some BND hackers, let's say simplistically, BND hackers deleting the computers of some Chinese APTs. That's just a tit for tat. I believe I see less potential for escalation there than if we really go out of domain. And I would still say all these out-of-domain responses should be on the table and are actually sometimes more sensible if we want to address this conflict geopolitically rather than resorting to any cyber operations. And then the circle closes to what you said. Well, through such a counter-cyber operation, a lot of things can happen, but certainly not that our IT infrastructures become more secure. And when we look at the damage that ransomware and criminals cause, what kind of... If there are compromises through APTs, like with parties or authorities, then I believe that deleting some computers or something like that isn't really what advances this country in terms of IT security.
You just mentioned that there are actually several types of hackbacks, namely the defensive hackback, which is more about tracking and disabling command and control servers. And yes, this offensive aspect, that's what I mentioned, like infiltrating systems, deleting data, causing damage, exposing, and so on. Do you think that these two systems, are these the systems that are ultimately right for the classic hackback, which we often talk about? Or do you see other possibilities, for example, this topic, where people often talk about it, it's more about doing some kind of infiltration to solve the whole thing, rather than just deactivating something. In the past, we've seen that law enforcement agencies prefer not to deactivate the system, but rather keep it online to collect data. And then deactivate after 2 or 3 years, and then to initiate criminal proceedings, because enough data has been collected. That's also a form of hackback that can be done.
So I usually use non-intrusive methods and intrusive methods. Non-intrusive is just that, redirecting DDoS packets, setting up honeypots, all that stuff. And intrusive is the whole thing where I actively bypass security mechanisms and what I do on the target, like the effect and target, whether I delete data there or if I'm just trying to find out who owns that computer and so on. That's a different story. So with these completely non-intrusive things, I would say that's most of what I've come across so far. In some cases, the authorities are allowed to do that. In this case, the Federal Office for Security in Information Technology. And in some cases, you can expand on that further and maybe also give companies like Telecom, for example, more options to do that in their networks. To do for Germany. With the intrusive things, you have to be careful. You just have to look at what can be done there, what are the damages, and then, of course, the whole ecosystem. Where do I get my tools from? Am I giving money to a company that sells tools to rights-violating regimes using taxpayer money, which then selling to human rights-violating regimes? And am I using taxpayer money, which then promoting the development of these projects that then lead to kidnappings and murders somewhere in Turkey or something like that? You really have to pay very close attention to that. And at the same time, that scales the least. So with intrusive measures, you can definitely take down a bot or something like that, sure. But scaling is probably more about the non-intrusive part that you've correctly described as passive. Probably more. And then, as I said, with intrusive things, we need to talk about deployment parameters, about how can the evidence be digitally signed securely, blah, blah, all that stuff. To your point, which I find very important, namely, if we do this, so if we having access to infrastructures and not just taking them down or destroying them immediately, but rather collecting evidence, that's one thing. I really believe that it largely depends on the discretion of the investigators because they ultimately have to justify and deal with it. With the damage that has occurred in the meantime, it's about where they decided to continue collecting evidence and not take down the infrastructure. I can think of an example from the USA, one that is a bit different in nature, but goes in that direction, where a company is being bought, a company that manages crypto funds, and then it just continues to operate from the US government. And of course, from the very first day you take over this company, the US government has access to a lot of messages where they can read that crimes are currently being committed. And then, of course, it's also like this, yes, maybe someone is being murdered there, but maybe I still want to keep collecting for another year so that I can catch even more people. You can take hops and then you can convict. And that's really difficult. And since I don't come from the law enforcement sector, I don't presume to have an opinion on when the point is where you say, okay, now it's enough, we wrap this up. Or whether in the first instance that you say, okay, hey, if we don't intervene now or intervene in a way that it gets noticed, then someone is going to die, then we have to intervene now. I think that's something that varies greatly from country to country, as well as something that is, in theory and also in the application of law enforcement agencies, I honestly haven't been able to form an opinion yet, and I don't have any expertise on it.
You're actually bringing up a very important point. Whenever we talk about hackback, this topic also comes into play for me. Legal gray area comes into play. In Germany, we have in the criminal code, I believe it's section 102, which mainly deals with this hacking issue, not hacking into foreign systems and so on and so forth. To what extent do you see it that way now? Sure, we're all not lawyers, but what's your personal opinion? Is hackback allowed or legal in Germany?
You have, well, there are legal foundations for the federal office that allows it to investigate ISPs abroad, like telecommunications. And such things could be used to, for example, make attributions. The Federal Office for Information Security has, I believe, 3 or 4 paragraphs that allow to take non-intrusive passive measures. For example, against attackers, to instruct someone to do something, but of course also an intrusive measure. For example, they are allowed to instruct ISPs to roll out software updates on their routers. And then you have in the state police laws, the possibilities are relatively broadly defined, and theoretically, state police can do quite a lot. What we would consider active cyber operations or hackback now includes the intrusive measures. So far, it has rarely or never been applied, also due to resource reasons. But still, in my opinion, the legal basis, I think, especially the Bavarian Police Act, is the most comprehensive. But we have legal foundations for certain things. The authorities that are allowed to do this know it. And that's why I also find this discussion we always have in Germany, the political one, so unfortunate. Like, we need a hackback. Yeah, what do you actually want? So, yeah, I want to know if you're interested or not. That would already be, that's the nuance level we've reached after 6 years of discussion. But to have a real discourse, I've always said, okay, dear BMI, if you want that, okay, then let's talk about it. Exactly what kind of legal regulations would you give to the federal office, for example, if there were a constitutional framework for it? What exactly should the federal office or the Office for the Protection of the Constitution be allowed to do? And if you can't explain to me what exactly you should be able to do and where you're getting your resources from, if you want that, then we don't need to have this discussion. I'm not having a discussion with you about whether hackback is a yes or no, but I'm having a discussion with you about what exact legal regulations and the corresponding technical measures should be implemented. What safeguards are there? So what mechanisms for control are there to ensure that they do it right and follow the rules? What transparency regulations are there? What needs to be published? In hindsight, so that people like us can understand it and maybe criticize it. And where do the resources you're using come from? And if you can answer these questions for me, I know I'm asking a lot, then we can discuss. But at another level, I won't be discussing hackbacks in 2025 anymore. I'm sorry.
What I also find a bit difficult is that when we talk about hackbacks, it's something very everyday for me. Who can actually ensure that it actually hits the right target? You know, because when we talk about a hackback, it's usually the case that attackers rarely reveal their identity. I mean, they use VPNs, other servers, different IP addresses, whatever. And then suddenly I might be attacking an IP address or a server, but I don't even know if that's actually my intended target in the end. I find that so fascinating because I see it from the perspective of cybersecurity as it is. Yeah, it's not even clear that the server that has attacked me actually belongs to the attacker. And now the other way around with the hackback. Now I'm attacking a system where I also don't know if it belongs to that person or if it's really the system. I can imagine that being difficult too.
Yes, whoever carries that out definitely has a very high duty of care for what they do on which system. The organization will also have to be held accountable for that. For this reason, I find the approach of saying maybe, well, if one... Any authority that takes the lead on intrusive measures should probably be the police, because the police have relatively high requirements when it comes to control and protection mechanisms, as well as transparency regulations, at least compared to the military or the BND, for example. And then you have, at the same time, maybe 2 points. For example, during the Emotet takedown, we saw that a configuration change was delivered to a large number of unknown systems that were also located abroad. Yes, oh, exactly. And of course, you can argue that it can't be, you can't just change integrity on systems where you no longer know who owns them and where they are located. Did anyone complain in the end that something got broken because of that? Not known to me. Similar to about 10 years ago, the FBI in the USA conducted Operation Torpedo. They exploited a zero-day vulnerability, so in the Tor browser, but it hasn't been clear until today whether it was Firefox that used Tor or if it was in the Tor add-on itself. And they created a marketplace for, I believe it was child pornography, can be equipped with such a beacon. That means anyone who accessed that marketplace website in Tor, in the dark web, received a beacon that then sent back, here I am. And of course, they had, I think, about 40,000 systems or so. Of those, 12,000 were abroad. We wrote it down, don't hold me to it, but it was thousands of systems. No state has ever complained that the FBI provided data on which computers in its country accessed a dark web child pornography site. And I believe that if we need to have an honest and objective discussion, we have to, of course, be careful here and so on. But yeah, so far we have not seen that these operations have at least resulted in a hospital no longer being able to function or a critical infrastructure being brought down. And if a state complains that someone has intervened in its systems, and maybe to touch on that briefly again, of course, it also makes a difference if I know and I should know which systems I'm intervening in and where they are located. That makes it even more complicated. Systems, to be honest, for us, China is a strategic rival according to our national security strategy. Intervening in systems is something different than with the French, for example, or with a state that we might want to somehow convince internationally to be on our side. But with those that are not in NATO or that are not a strategic rival, that certainly makes a difference. But of course, you also have to ask, if I have systems in France, I would tend to talk to the French partners instead and to say, hey, can you help me? Instead of saying, hey, I don't feel like waiting for you. I'll just compromise your system. So there is, of course, an inherent geopolitical perspective in there, aside from the perspective, that's obviously my computer, that's your computer, which belongs to some company.
But this actually fits well with the system patching debate we always have, where the BSI or other authorities want to be allowed to patch systems in critical infrastructure so that they aren't attacked from the outside. But it's also an intervention in their system landscape. So this doesn't really have much to do with help, but it's still an intervention behind it.
Yes, definitely. So the legal basis that exists is that the BSI can instruct, for example, Telecom to patch their own routers remotely. So the BSI itself doesn't do anything, it just issues orders. So it's not that the BSI goes in and patches my router because there's something wrong, but it says, where am I right now? I think I'm with Vodafone. Dear Vodafone, here, the router isn't patched, let's do some remote patching. And since those are their systems, do they know the systems? That's different than saying, hey, the BSI is now starting to, I don't know, with companies or buyer, or start patching some productive systems there. That's for sure. And I also don't think the BSI wants that. I also don't believe that there is sufficient expertise in every individual subfield for anyone to write a patch and deploy it. So I think we're far off there. That wouldn't be good. I agree with you. But I think B, neither is it intended, nor is it in the interest of the federal government or the BSI to acquire such capabilities for this authority.
We just talked about this, and you also mentioned at the beginning, for example, Israel has also been known for doing hackbacks. Do you also like other countries? One where you know, okay, they've done hackbacks before, and what was the outcome of that?
So most of the information about counter-threat operations actually comes from the USA. The USA are, you can think what you want about it, but the USA are very transparent when it comes to such operations. That all goes through their judiciary. And because of that, we have a very, very good information situation. We wrote down a few case studies and published them on our interface. And I think apart from one case study, they're all American. One example, but it will just provide a good information basis. The Israelis did something, the Iranians did something, and at some point it gets a bit blurry. Is it already a conflict, or are these still counter-threat operations, hackbacks? What those definitions are. If you want to go further, regarding the topic of offensive cyber operations, so not necessarily just as a reaction to something, but generally, offensive cyber operations, then there are, of course, many states involved. The English and the Australians, for example, published their own little pamphlets last year, and the year before published How You Proceed. But to be honest, it's all just an information situation on which I can't really judge whether it was done well. So with the Americans, And also what we know about the Emotet takedown, for example, we have a sufficiently good information situation to assess that. And that's why we included these case studies in our publications and mapped them against our own developed framework and said, were these operations that we consider as successful NB, would assess them as responsible or rather as not responsible? And surprisingly, the American operations come off quite well.
So super interesting. So I actually didn't know that either. It might also be something for those who are interested. Feel free to take a look around the website and also check out these use cases. I think that's super interesting. For me, one topic that always comes up when we talk about hackbacks is the ethical debate around it. Is that even allowed? Does that make sense? Does that even make sense? What do you think about that?
I try to stay out of ethical debates as much as possible. That's why I said earlier, what provides the most security for this country? And yeah, the reason I stay out of it is because I have to be able to argue in the political arena why I hold a certain opinion and with those with whom I have success with ethical arguments, these are the ones who actually mostly share my opinion anyway. And with those whom I don't have success with ethical arguments, they are the ones I actually need to convince. So a long time ago, I decided to step back and say, okay, we're not looking at this from an ethical perspective, but rather from a purely technical and hard national security perspective. Because we still come to a very similar, if not the same result, but have an argument that convinces opponents or those who are not convinced of our opinion, I can convince them better and take them along more effectively than if I were also arguing from an ethical standpoint. I'm not saying it's unimportant. I'm just saying that if we want to convince the people who aren't convinced about this topic right now, then a different approach is often more effective, stringent and focused.
Even if the ethical issue isn't that important to you, I often hear that there's this desire to defend oneself, especially for companies, right? When they are attacked, they want to defend themselves. You've already said something about that. Personally, I would also say that I wouldn't do that right now, because if a company has already been attacked, then there is some kind of vulnerability that has been exploited. And it's just difficult for him to argue that for me. So I wouldn't see it as torture to say, hey, companies should also do hackbacks.
It's not that ethics aren't important to me. It's just that in the work of persuasion, it's not the primary argument right now. But on your point, I agree with you. So there is an emotional component, and we hear that not just from companies, but also from the government. I should be allowed to defend myself. We're here. We have the right to. That's all not a basis for argumentation. It's all just gut feeling and emotional and somehow populist. But as a company, I would tell you, yes, it's nice that you feel like you need to be able to defend yourself. That's okay. I believe that during World War II, American companies also built anti-aircraft defenses on their skyscrapers. All fair, but we have a legal basis, and that legal basis doesn't allow you to do that. To break into computer systems because you are your company and you also have to adhere to the criminal code and so on, you can do whatever you want, but it's not legally permissible. Point. Yeah? And then, of course, the component you just mentioned becomes much more important. So maybe you should just take care of your vulnerabilities and your IT infrastructures before you hire 20 people to hack back against some cybercrime organization somewhere in Eastern Europe or Russia. So if I say this, I don't know, it might get you further in a C-level meeting to say we've done something, but that it doesn't move forward or improve security.
Now, it's like this, especially since you've hinted at it a bit. I've also read that hackbacks could be used as a kind of deception maneuver to distract and to redirect that accordingly. What are your thoughts on the topic?
Are you talking about redirecting data packets or distracting from something?
Yes. So above all, I've often heard that hackback can be used as a deception maneuver to essentially make the attack go nowhere and redirect it to other parties, to other people. So basically picking another innocent party to target, so to speak. So yeah, whether it's redirecting data packets or redirecting attacks, there are many technical ways to do that. But I've also read that other states have done that as well.
Indeed, I think it really depends on that. I mean, a lot falls under that term active cyber hackback. I think it really depends, again, on the things I mentioned earlier. Who does it? What are the nuances? Legal basis, transparency, oversight? Are there control measures? Are there safeguards? There are... Have we really thought about what we're actually causing instead? And I believe that if you go through such concrete indicators, you can definitely analyze the case or the cases you've just mentioned and see if that is the case in individual instances. Whether to assess it as positive or negative is, I'm not aware of any case at the moment, but as I said, I think if you have such indicators to verify that, then the definition is clear, or it doesn't really matter what it's categorized under. You can look at it very concretely.
when we talk about hackback, as I mentioned at the beginning, it's also a bit about ensuring that you've really targeted the right person, that it's the right approach. We've already talked about the methods, that there are active and also passive ways. Where do you see for yourself personally in the future regarding this? I know hackback is such a huge buzzword. Everyone has a different take on it. But where do you see the future for us personally, more in a passive role or more in an active role?
So I don't think it always has to be either or. I do believe that the area of the takedown of botnets and so on is indeed valid. And we should take a closer look at how we are then exposed according to the indicators, the legal basis, where we get the stuff from, and so on and so forth. And what is the deployment scenario? And so taking down or cleaning up control networks and such, you can and should at least talk about that. I don't know where you end up in the end. You have to take a look. But I believe that's one of the valid use cases in terms of that. Let's discuss what is missing. Otherwise, I'm in favor of non-intrusive measures. We should then try to provide all the possibilities, both resources and legal frameworks, that make technical sense. And on the other hand, I believe having the option to take down a botnet makes sense. But it just is, you take a measure that is very resource intensive and is only effective after half a year or a year. And it only prevents future damage, namely the damage that is being done. That means we need to allocate resources. And when we talk about overall cybersecurity, I still believe that a large part of our resources must be used to prevent our systems from being compromised, to carry out serious attacks, to quickly detect when they are compromised. And yes, here the basic words are resilience, getting things back up and running as quickly as possible so that the damage is kept to a minimum. And I believe that should always be our premise. When it comes to cybersecurity and active cyber defense, we can certainly discuss hackback on the sidelines. But in my opinion, it has taken up way too much space in recent years, considering that it really won't and doesn't make a huge contribution to overall IT security and cybersecurity in Germany.
Now, I come back to my favorite topic because this is something that is being heavily pushed through the village by the lobby group in Germany, namely the topic of cyber defense. Do you see hackback as part of cyber defense?
Yes, it is already being referred to as active cyber defense. So, but as I said, we also have our definition in our paper. If it fits in with what is being discussed in political terms, under cyber defense, then it fits in. If not, then it doesn't, because everyone has a different term for cyber defense. And then cybersecurity comes into play. And as I said, I think we need to take a detailed look at what is meant by what. I believe what we've been discussing under active cyber defense, we've been able to clarify in the last 20 to 30 minutes. And exactly, but with every new word, you open up a new can of worms. We can certainly discuss that. And for example, cyber is also predestined for that. But that's a completely separate topic again. And I would also like to break things down to concrete levels, as I said, because most of the time, people themselves don't know what they mean with their words. And that's always very difficult to discuss, I must say.
Yes, thank you very much. I just took the key topics for myself from our conversation. Hackback is legally, technically, and perhaps ethically very risky. One has to think about it. Do you really want to do it this way? For me, there are also legal, in quotes, legal alternatives, something like threat interface. And yes, there are also other defense mechanisms that don't necessarily have to be a hackback. And what is also exciting for me is to see how hackback is being implemented internationally in the future. So maybe the EU is also planning to say, hey, we want to include hackback on our agenda and we want to describe it in more detail. I think something can still happen there. And then that changes too. But in my personal opinion, when it comes to topics where it really involves hacking back to take revenge, we should definitely stay away from that. But I agree with you when it comes to botnets or any darknet stories where it is also about people there to prevent access or to prevent crimes, then I see this as an effective means. But now to take hackback as the all-encompassing topic, as it is often done in politics. Hey, we have to do hackback. I'm really scared of that. Because I always think, okay, if we really go in there with this mindset, we want to do hackback in order to stop the attacker. In other words, to show, hey, we're also strong now and you can't mess with us. I really don't want to see what happens on the other side as a countermeasure.
You know, I'm absolutely with you. I think we have more important topics than active cyber defense, especially when you throw in blockchain, AI, and quantum all together. Just ask how many companies really have 100% asset management, a proper patch management system, and sufficiently qualified employees who can tackle the issue of IT security. These are the bread and butter topics that no one wants to talk about in politics because they're boring and all. But there's a lack of that everywhere. And when we have solved those, or almost solved them, then we can gladly take a look at those shiny things. And of course, there is also ML-supported machine learning-based software that can help professionals a bit. I don't want to question that either. But this focus on the new and shiny indeed, while we truly haven't done our homework at all, in fact, is a bit embarrassing.
Absolutely. Perhaps as a final call to action, the question to the community again. What do you think about the topic of hackback? Is it legitimate self-defense or a taboo subject? Feel free to share your opinion in the comments. I would love to hear it. And I would say thank you to you, Sven. Thank you for your participation. That's it for this episode of Cybersecurity as a Top Priority.